Good morning. This would be Sunday, May 4th, 2014. And we are continuing our talks from this book, Consciousness Transformed, the 1963-64 Hawaii Hotel Talks by Joel Goldsmith. So we're talking about his talks. And sometimes he talks about Jesus' talks. So we have talks about talks about talks. Now, I read this chapter. I reread it. I read it again. I meditated. And I just could not find that much to talk about. It seems that he's addressing a lot of these statements to the students gathered there, and they were practitioners. Some were practitioners that practiced spiritual healing. Some were group leaders, tape group leaders that practiced having a tape group. And some were perhaps teachers. And so he's addressing these statements to them and to us that are doing the same thing. In fact, he says in here that even if you're one individual, you still have a ministry in your own circle of family and friends. And that means that you must know the truth wherever you go. So, in this chapter, he talks about this is a lesson for that, this is a lesson for this. And he's talking about how no one owes him anything, not even to attend the meetings. He's talking about how no one should be dependent on him as a person. And sometimes he doesn't even show up for the meeting he gives, specifically to enhance or show that lesson. That you can have a spiritual awakening, a spiritual experience without the man, Joel. He talks about not meeting at regular times. He talks about not believing that because you attend a gathering, a group, or a meeting, that you're going to be more spiritual. And he talks about, repeatedly in this chapter, the lesson that if you're waiting to become an advanced student in order to know God aright, you're misunderstanding. Because it has nothing to do with starting out or beginning students or advanced students. It has to do with inner realization, which can happen at any time. And it's much more likely to happen, he says, if you understand, know rightly that God's grace is your sufficiency, and there's a sufficiency of God's grace at this moment and at every moment. And so those are some of the lessons he discusses in this chapter. In other words, we must reach the place where we are not even dependent on God, but we rely on God within to meet our needs, our every need, including revealing itself to us. Now, there's nothing wrong with attending a meeting or listening to a talk or reading a book or being with others that are lifted up. But we must come to the place where we don't have to have that. That's a nice added thing. It's a nice luxury. I can tell you in my own case, I had a teacher of sorts. He himself said he was, how did he put it? Just a servant and not much of a teacher, but that was Don when I first started out on this path, and basically he took me from the streets of Los Angeles where I was running around and getting into trouble and pointed me within where I found God. I had an inner experience of God. And then Don left this plane. And so he stayed alive just long enough to introduce me to God, and within 30 days he was gone. That's the only teacher I've had. Now, I spent some time with Herb. I went up to some of his classes, and I flew over to his house in Hawaii, but he wasn't really my teacher. In fact, the first time I met him, I said, "Herb, I need to tell you, you're not my teacher. I have a teacher, and the teacher is within." And so, for all intents and purposes, other than the years 73, 4, and 5, I have never had a teacher on this plane. I have walked this path entirely alone. And other than occasional classes I went to just out of curiosity, like Virginia Stevenson's in Chattanooga, Tennessee, I haven't really attended too many classes either. Maybe 3 or 4 with Herb, 2 with Virginia, 1 with Alan Marsh, and that's it. So my walk has been almost all of it alone. That which I know from going within. Not from the books, because they won't do any good. But the books are the finger pointing at the moon. You go to the moon. You go within. And that's what I've had to do. I've had to wrestle with these principles and make them my own. And so, that's what I tried to explain to a lady who wrote me this week and asked me to help her understand that God is love. Here's what she said, and I don't think that she would mind me reading it to you. She said, "While studying the infinite way, I realize I am having trouble comprehending God as love. It seems to me that I feel more certain comprehending God as life, truth, principle, substance, mind, spirit, soul. What does it mean God is love? Is love a noun, a verb, or a feeling? If love is total acceptance, where does principle fit in?" And that's a valid, those are valid questions. Do you remember Joel's story? He could not understand, he could not get a feeling for God is love. Do you remember that? I don't remember where it is. When I run across it, I'll be sure and forward it to this woman. But he talks about not being able to understand love and telling that to some of the students and them saying to him, "But Joel, you're one of the most loving people we've ever met." But he could get no feeling for it. And then I think it was in Portland, Oregon. He was to give a class, and he was walking down the road, and he passed a little flower stand, and the voice said, "Won't you buy a little flower for me?" And he went back, and he bought the flower, and when he went up to the podium, he put the flower on the podium during his talk. You remember? Something like that. Anyway, out of that came the pamphlet for God is Love, or, well, I'm not sure what the name of the pamphlet is, but it has love in the title, and you can't miss it. He didn't write too many that way. And in there he explains, well, it's one of the very few talks he gave on God is Love. And my reply to this lady was, it's not about comprehending or understanding or feeling, but rather it is about experiencing God as love. This is not something that can be given to you from out here. It is something you must go within and receive from God itself. In your meditations, you might say something like, "Father, what are you as love? Reveal yourself as love." And then wait a few minutes, 2 or 3, and see what is revealed from within. This is the only way in which you can find your answer. You see, it has to be an experience. It has to be an inner experience. And that can only come through meditation. And that's what Joel is saying in his, the beginning of this chapter, 3/4 of this chapter, is that you must come to see, you must have the inner realization that God's grace is your sufficiency in all things, and there's a sufficiency of God's grace present at all times. And with that realization, you, although you won't need anybody, you can still have the joy of being in their company. Now, John, in the first book of John, his famous quote is, "Beloved, let us love one another, for love is of God, and everyone that loveth is born of God and knoweth God. He that loveth not knoweth not God, for God is love. In this was manifested the love of God toward us, because that God sent his only begotten Son into the world that we might live through him." And that's pretty much the experience I had. In the very beginning years, I did not believe in God. In 1972, I doubted that there was such a thing as God. And the God that I had been taught about, the God that you fear, I was right. There is no such God. Now, after meeting Don and having him point me within and going within and becoming still until I had that inner experience, through surrender, God became a living reality. I came to see, and I often said, God loves me more than I could ever love myself. And so I had a kind of personal love flowing from God to me and from me to God. That wasn't quite, well, that's not quite what I have today. Because I came to see that that's not quite correct. It's not that God loves Bill, or Joan, or Mary, or Ruth, or Tom, or Peter, or Paul, or Joel. It's not that God loves you personally, although it feels like that, because when you experience that love, it definitely operates in your individual life. But we're coming to see that individual life is not the same as personal life. And so I see it more like this now. When I walk outside right now with the sun shining, I can step into that sunshine and feel its warmth. And it's wonderful. It feels just beautiful here in the springtime in the mountains. Now, is that sun warming me personally? I mean, did that sun say, I'm going to send some warmth down there to Bill Skiles? How many thousands of times bigger than the Earth is it? And like, it can even spot me. No, it's not personal. It just shines. It's its nature to shine. And when I walk out in it, I feel its blessing. And so now I see that God is, eternally is, forever is shining. And God hasn't moved. But that does me no good until I come into the conscious awareness of it. The actual experience of it. My eyes are open to that which is. And then that which is flows throughout my being and blesses everything it touches. That's love in action. God is. But is God loving me personally? No, God is love. And when you get near God, in your realization, you experience God's love. Of course, it's overflowing. You can't help but say, thank you. I love you. It just comes out of you sometimes. And the answer seems to come back, I love you too. As more of that flowing from that grace, which is ever-present, flows into manifest form. And so it's a very strange thing, because there's a love flowing back and forth, yet none of it personal. It's impersonal. Individually experienced and yet impersonal. You see that? Again, we're brought back, and I'm just seeing this so much. Joel was told by the inner voice, you must seek the impersonal Christ and impersonal healing, and so we might add impersonal love. So that kind of shows you a little of my evolution or involution on that. But again, you have to have your own. Mine won't do it. You can listen to it and say, well, that's interesting. I think I understand now. God is impersonal love. But you don't. You do not understand. Knowing God aright means you experience it. And how God reveals its love to you is going to be an individual experience. Okay, so, yes, John is right. God is love. Now, towards the end of this chapter, I really had no idea what I was going to talk on today. But towards the end of this chapter, I found, well, you know, there's the milk of the message and the meat. And I found a steak here. I found a London broil. There's plenty here, and we'll read it slowly. Listen. Take this principle home and ponder on it, that God cannot do anything for you in the past or in the future. You must attain that conviction. Why? Because the conviction is that you can't move God. God's not something that, well, you can't move the infinite. You can't pray it into moving for you. And you can't pray it into doing something for you in the future. And you can't pray it into doing something for you in the past. You can't even pray it into doing something for you right now. You must come to the inner conviction that God is. And what you need is not God to do something for you. What you need is to awaken to the isness of God. As you realize that you are living now, you will come to realize that it is at this moment that you must function by God's grace. Here we go back to Paul. Thy grace is my sufficiency in all things. When? This moment. How much? A sufficiency unto this moment. In this moment, God's grace is functioning within you to whatever extent is necessary for you at this moment. You need not concern yourself with the past or with the future. Nature gives us enough air to breathe only for this second. And you know right well how impossible it would be to try to put your breath in storage. Incidentally, I think it was Herb that said that Joel was convinced he was the reincarnation of Paul. And a part of what he did here was to set right the mistakes he made as Paul. And one of them was when he said that the carnal mind is enmity against God. And that was not right. The carnal mind is nothingness. And that was a big part of Joel's lifting of all humanity into that state of consciousness where the carnal mind, mortal mind, is nothing. It's not an enemy of God. It has no power. It's nothing. And it's impersonal. It belongs to no one. So, he quotes Paul like a lot, and he likes Paul. And he says, you may have gathered the impression that there really are beginning students and advanced students, and this is the very place that you break down that belief. As far as God is concerned, it makes no difference. Yes, well, it makes no difference. There is a sufficiency of God's grace where you are now to meet the need of this moment. Now, again, God is, and we seem to be really centering in on that. God is. And yes, because of omnipresence, all that God is, and is here, now. That's the beauty of omnipresence. All that God is right where you are, and all that God is right where I am. Because right where I am is right where you are, because there's one I. And so all of us have the allness of God right here, right now. And when you come into that conviction, then you realize how silly it is to talk about beginning students and advanced students. What does that have to do with it? I suppose what that has to do with it is that it is true that all of God is here, but if you have not the awareness of that, then for you that's not true. It's only a theory. But if you do have the awareness of that, then you experience it. You experience that grace. So, it's not really a beginning student and an advanced student. It's not a matter of learning. It's a matter of actual awakening. You can't really call that an advanced student. You can call that someone who is awakening to that which is. Once you are anchored in that realization, you can go on with your studies and with your meditations, and you make rapid progress toward the full realization of God. You have no problems if you have sufficient grace of God to fulfill you at this moment. In this moment, God's grace is your sufficiency. There is enough of it present to meet the need of this moment, and a week from now, enough will be there. It's amazing, really. An infinite Father, an infinite Son, an infinite journey. There will always be as much ahead of you as there is behind you. There will always be as much grace available as you need. Always, forever, eternally. Always there will be the sufficiency of grace to meet the need of this moment, and on the spiritual path, you have no right to live one moment ahead of this moment. Of course not. Since God is, and God is now, you have to live this moment to have that awareness of God, ising. Sure, he says, you plan meetings ahead, or you make travel arrangements, or you plan business affairs in advance. Certainly, but without burden and without problems, because from one moment to the next there is sufficient grace to meet that moment. This is all you need. This is all anybody ever needs, enough grace for this moment. How can you be separated from God's grace, he asks. Neither death nor life shall be able to separate us from the love of God. And so he's telling you here that his experience of a sufficiency of grace here now is the love of God. In his experience. But if you don't have the experience of God's grace as your sufficiency, as a living experience, then this is just a theory. You still have to go within and find your own. Let God reveal to you what God is as love. Neither sickness nor death can separate us because God's grace is omnipresence. How much? A sufficiency according to the needs of this moment. If you carry this remembrance into your spiritual ministry, you will remember that there is also a sufficiency of God's grace for your patient, or for 100 patients, or for your students, or for your tape group, or for your family, or for your friends, or even for your enemies if you're praying for them. Always remember, it is the acknowledgement that brings the experience. Now there you have it. You have to have the awareness of it. If I acknowledge a sufficiency of God's grace in this moment, I have it. If I do not acknowledge it, I virtually deny it. Here again, remember one of the basic principles of this work. Nothing can happen in your experience except through your consciousness. Therefore, if you are not consciously aware that God's grace is sufficient unto this moment, then it is not so unto you. But if you are consciously aware, if you abide in this truth, you will bear fruit richly. You see that? Now, how do you become consciously aware that God's grace is your sufficiency in this moment? Is it by repeating this statement over and over as an affirmation? God's grace is my sufficiency. God's grace is my sufficiency at this moment. God's grace is my sufficiency at this moment, and there is a sufficiency of God's grace always. So I repeat that over and over as I'm walking down the street or driving my car or going to the market or going to a business meeting. And is that supposed to help me? Well, may it calm me down a little bit physically. But is that the conscious awareness of it? No, no. All I have there is the conscious awareness of my thinking about it. I am aware of my thoughts on the subject. That's not the same at all, at all. And so, I may be doing that, and I may experience that it is not so unto me. And I experience lack and limitation. I don't have what I need. And then I turn to God. I don't understand. Why is this not working? I may doubt the infinite way, or Joel, or Herb. I may doubt that these things work. How can you say this works? I tried it. It doesn't work. No. You never got the conscious awareness. You had the conscious awareness of your thoughts about it. Well, how do you get the conscious awareness of that grace? Well, we go back to the Kailua study series and back to those 12 times or more a day. Yes, it's certainly fine to affirm God's grace is my sufficiency. But then you must stop taking thought. You must be still for a minute or two or three or five. And if you've reached that place through your practice of the art of meditation, where you can affirm something and then be still, and then feel the inner movement of that grace, become consciously aware of spirit flowing, feel something moving, that's the conscious awareness of grace. Then, if you have that, and you have it several times a day, you are abiding in this truth, and you will bear fruit richly. It will form itself. Your conscious awareness of God makes God real. See, without your conscious awareness of God, you can say all you want about God, but it's not real. It's only a thought, a theory, an idea, a concept. See the difference? It's a world of difference. That's why one person with consciousness of God, which is Christ consciousness, conscious awareness of Christ, that inner movement of God, individualized, conscious awareness of that, makes you Christ. But the thoughts about it and the theories about it and discussing it and writing about it and reading and thinking, that makes you the natural man thinking about God. And it's not the same. Those people live in two different worlds, two different universes. The former living in the consciousness of truth, the conscious awareness of God, a universe governed by love. And there we have it again in the New Horizon, peopled with children of God. But it's not governed by love for you personally. No, the person's not there. Christ is standing there. And it's governed by love. Individually. Expressing individually. Always we come back to the impersonal. That's the whole secret. Now, if you do not abide in this truth, and if you do not let this truth abide in you, you will be as a branch that is cut off. Therefore, the secret is acknowledgement. Acknowledge him in all thy ways. But now, acknowledging is not just a thought now, is it? It's the conscious awareness of the real spiritual presence moving, living, being, ising. Acknowledge the presence of a divine grace sufficient unto this moment, and then stop taking thought for tomorrow. Your recognition of a divine grace sufficient unto the moment is your bread, your meat, your wine, and your water. See, the grace is not your bread and meat and wine and water until you have the conscious awareness of the grace. Then it's your meat and wine and water and bread. Man shall not live by bread alone. You must have that word in your consciousness, and there you go. You cannot live by bread alone. You cannot live by the thoughts. You must have the capital W word in your consciousness. You must have the experience of that word, that spirit, that presence. You must be a law unto yourself by the truth you know. And if you are not as yet aware of the omnipresence of divine grace sufficient unto this moment, become aware of it and live with it. And there you have your 12 times a day. Then you will realize how your life is lived not by might and not by power, but by that inner grace. The Master is saying now, have I been with you so long a time? Has this grace been there all this time and you have not recognized it? Your recognition, your awareness of it, opens your consciousness for it to function. You see, it cannot function without your opening your consciousness. And then, when you open your consciousness, that love flows freely. But not for any personal person, but just because that's the nature of that inner consciousness. I mean, that inner presence, that inner spirit, that inner grace. That's the nature of it. Love flowing. That's the nature of it. And it flows individually in your experience when you open consciousness and not before. Those of you with the ministry must assure your patients and your students that their salvation is not dependent on their becoming an advanced student, and I'm telling that to you now. Being an advanced student and knowing all the ins and outs of the infinite way is not what you need. What you need is the opening of consciousness, and that can happen the third day, particularly if you've had experience in a past incarnation, or it can happen in 30 years. No one knows. But it's not dependent on your learning. It's dependent on your awakening, your awareness, your opening consciousness. So he says, their salvation is dependent on their recognition of this divine grace sufficient unto this moment. This makes it possible for students to be reformed, healed, lifted up in their first days of searching. God's grace is not dependent on processes. God's grace is not dependent on anything but recognition or awareness. And your responsibility is to recognize the function of a divine grace operating in your patients and your students' consciousness as of this moment, sufficient unto the claim thereof, and sufficient unto the need thereof. And that's what I do for everybody, every one of you. In my evening meditation, sometime in my morning meditations, I recognize that that presence, which I am aware of, is circulating, if that's a word, everywhere present with all of you. Otherwise, he says, you will be encouraging a belief that patients and students need you personally. There we go again. You do not need a person. You need the awareness of the impersonal. And sometimes listening to a person reminds you that you need the impersonal. But the day will come when there won't be a person. You might be adrift, like that man was in a little boat, in the rowboat in the middle of the sea. There's no person there, no book, no tape, no talk. What are you going to do? Well, if you've developed this conscious awareness of the omnipresence within you, of love itself, flowing of God, then you'll know what to do. You'll go within, you'll open that inner door, and I will come in and sup with you. You are not conducting a personal ministry. Your ministry is the ministry of the activity of Christ. How easy it is then to set them free in Christ. In our meditations, we ponder truth, but we never repeat it as if it were an affirmation. No, we ponder the principle behind it, and then we turn within. Speak, Lord, thy servant heareth. Then let God confirm it. Let God put the seal on it. Let God reveal itself. And so the answer to the question is, how do you comprehend God is love, is right there. You don't comprehend it. I can't comprehend infinity. I can't comprehend omnipresence, omniscience, omnipotence. But I can stop trying to comprehend. I can follow the directions. I can stop looking at the finger and gaze instead at the moon rise. I can go within, open consciousness. Father, what are you as love? And then I can be still. I can be receptive. I can listen. I can wait upon the Lord. And behold, I mount up with wings as eagles. So, the answer is an experience. You must experience God. God must become a living experience. And then you see, oh, I love being with that person, but I don't need them. I love going to these classes and listening to these talks, but I don't need them. It's just nice to be with someone that also knows of this inner presence. But this inner presence is my sufficiency. And it's nice to give and share with each other what comes as this infinite God expresses his love individually. It's wonderful to share it back and forth. Whether it's principles, whether it's things, it's just wonderful to be an instrument for this to flow. Well, let's take a moment. As I said, there wasn't really a whole lot to discuss this week, so let's take a moment, see if anything else comes. This is a good time to close our eyes, quiet down, settle down, be centered. Yes, Father, thy grace is our sufficiency in all things. Thy grace. And grace is not like a rock. It's not a thing. It's not a noun. Grace is a verb. And so love would be a verb. An action, a movement. God's inner grace is a movement. Someone saw that and said, there is a river. The river is constantly flowing. It's a river of spirit, a river of grace, a river, an ocean of love, flowing, present, here, now, flowing. And so let me not look to persons or places or things. Let me not look to myself, a person. Let me not look to a personal mind. Let me drop all that. Let me come into the awareness that that inner flowing spiritual presence, that inner river, inner grace, inner love, inner ocean, that is my sufficiency. And let me come into the awareness of it by being still, opening consciousness and simply saying, Father, flow. Yes, I agree with John. The evidence of God's love is in the movement of the Christ which he gave to us all. The Christ omnipresent and yet the Christ individually expressed. This is the evidence. This is the love of God. Christ is the love of God. Christ experienced flowing, forming itself. Thank you, Father. Thank you. Thy love be done. So we have covered another of these talks, which Joel said we must assimilate. It must become bone of our bone and flesh of our flesh, part of our consciousness. Our consciousness itself flowing. We must assimilate these talks in order to move up higher into the realm of the mystical. And part of the realm of the mystical is knowing that God is love. Not personally, but God is love individually, expressed individually. Shared individually, yet omnipresent. And there is a sufficiency of that love, whether you're standing here with a need, the appearance of a need, whether you're walking outside of this body in the valley of the shadow of death, crossing over into that far country. Wherever you are standing, when you reach that far country, and there are those there waiting to welcome you in, all of these places, God is, and that love is flowing. If you come into the conscious awareness of it, it is so to you. But no one can explain it. It must be your own individual experience. Once you have it, it does not matter where you find yourself. As Joel so often says, if I make my bed in hell, that love is there. If I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, that love is there. If I ascend up into heaven, that love is there. It's a universe, a spiritual universe, governed by love, peopled with individuals experiencing that love. We call them children of God. That's what we are. But understanding it has no meaning. Experiencing it brings a new heaven and a new earth. Experiencing it brings New Jerusalem. Experiencing it brings an eternal love that no man can taketh away. Well, we had nothing to say, and yet we have spent the last 45 minutes saying it. Thank you all for listening in, and I just feel the need to say, I love you all. Blessings.